Hi everyone, this is John Frank, Editorial Director of PL Buyer, welcoming you to this latest PL Buyer podcast. This podcast is one in a series we're doing with Patrick Rodmel, President and CEO of Watt International, a Toronto-based integrated retail agency with more than 40 years of experience in more than 40 countries. Patrick also is a guest columnist with PL Buyer and will be co-chairing our new Best of Design Excellence Awards later this year, recognizing the best in private label package design. Today we'll be discussing Patrick's 10 keys to private label brand success, the topic of the columns he's been writing for PL Buyer this year. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
Good to have you. Let's begin by setting the scene for our discussion. Give us the thinking that led to your 10 keys. What can our readers and listeners here learn from them?
Well, it's kind of, I guess, a bit of a lofty expectation to talk about the keys to success in anything, but really as a business that's been involved with private brands for 30 years, really starting back with Loblaws and the creation of PC and No Name, and since then working on with over 100 retailers, we've kind of seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, if you will, John, and also seen the many different approaches businesses have taken to the creation of either successful or not so successful private brand programs. So everything from organizations that shoot from the hip on decision making and really have a more kind of renegade approach to getting the job done, to those that on the flip side may get stuck in the kind of analysis paralysis of decision making and development. So
you synthesized all those years of experience down to these 10 keys. Is that the thinking behind these?
Absolutely, and it's all about not, certainly a lot of the lessons we learn in life are from the failures and the disappointments, not just on the successes. So there's a lot of learning that comes through here about how not to do things, not just the right way to do it. So
that's a great point. Sometimes we do learn more from what doesn't work than from what works, don't we?
Absolutely.
And it keeps us humble in the process, too, which is always good.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, today we're focusing on key number 4, communication of purchase drivers. The headline for your column about that in our April issue asks, "Does your copy and imagery make your program look generic?" I would assume that's something to be avoided, isn't it? No one wants to look generic anymore, or do they?
Well, unless you're trying to really only sell as a price proposition, it's a very important factor in the consumer's or shopper's decision making. All product purchases today are made based on both functional and emotional drivers. So functional being the things like price and convenience, and is this product going to fulfill my needs? And the emotional drivers, it's how is this going to make me feel, this brand going to make me feel, and more specifically on this product. So depending upon the product category, that balance shifts. Some are more functional and some are more emotional in the decision drivers, but all product decisions involve an element of both. And essentially, with the more options there are out there, the more important the emotional side comes in. If there are six choices of peanut butter and I'm having to decide which one I'm going to choose of those, the emotional drivers become more and more important. So with more options out there, both in terms of retail locations and products on the shelf, the emotional side comes in, and copy and imagery can really strike emotional chords with consumers.
Hmm. Let's talk about imagery. You also warn in your column, you warn against the use of stock imagery on packaging. Why? And can retailers and suppliers afford to create unique artwork for all their new products?
Well, I hate to say, they can't afford not to, but we really feel sometimes that the decisions to incorporate things like stock imagery or, generic and sort of cut to the chase approaches to the actual creation of the canvas, if you will, on the product is really kind of micro and short-term thinking. A lot of that is driven by the short-term thinking of the volumes don't justify the investment. Mm-hmm. But if the program were done right, the artwork should actually last many years for the business, so the investment becomes less material over time. Mm-hmm. We really try to encourage our clients to look at the big picture. Every private label item is like a puzzle piece in the creation of the overall brand.
Mm.
And creating kind of a proprietary program with your own imagery helps reinforce the personality of the business. So creating a style, having something that's unique to your business, really helps to create the unique emotional connection as opposed to one that can come across as more, back to the first couple of points, generic.
And do you feel retailers are getting the message? And we're seeing a lot of new designs of late. Are they getting the message that each product is part of a larger brand?
Well, it's, I would almost say it's ironic, John, that I would say that we might in fact be taking a bit of a step backwards. And a lot of this has to do with the economic conditions. You know, private label does get the obvious sort of increase, if you will, during tougher economic times. It's a better value-based option. But generally speaking, over time, those volumes continue to go up. What also happens, though, is that the approach to producing the private label, that is a much more systematic approach to creating the packaging, becomes a mantra as businesses look to cut costs in the actual production, you know, across all different elements of the business, and private label is no island in that decision-making. So as decision-making comes in and it says we want to streamline costs in the development of our programs, then things like stock imagery and generic packaging that is far more systematic across the program starts to become the basis for decision making, which in our minds again is sort of short term thinking, not longer term in terms of creating brand.
Another point you mentioned in your column is that engaging copy is becoming a lost art. Why is that happening, and what do you mean exactly by engaging copy?
Well, you know, I guess the goal with branding overall, when you speak about creating a brand, a name, whether it's a business or a private label brand, whatever it is, our goal in branding is to get people to talk about you. So in other words, to get your brand to be part of the conversation. And essentially, too, when it comes to product, you know, private label packaging, is to get people to leave it on the counter. You know, if someone is embarrassed of the you know, of the private label program and always feels that they got to hide it when somebody comes over, that helps to, that reinforces the lack of possibility of having those products as sort of the advertising canvas that lives in the consumer's home. So when we take a look at the you know, the desire for efficiencies in programs that minimizes any investment in the copy as opposed to just simply product descriptors on the packaging, it's just another element that drives that generic force and doesn't allow the brand to become conversations for people.
That's a great point. I mean, we're really talking about more than packaging here. We're talking about advertising. We're talking about both point of sale and I suppose you could call it point of usage advertising as well.
Absolutely. You know, I think as in one of my earlier comments columns, I mentioned that IKEA is a business I love. And one of the reasons is that they really, despite, you know, some of the challenges people think of their stores as being too too long to shop, and often you take it home and it's too difficult to make or there's a piece missing or something, they really have taken the position of being part of the conversation of the consumer. And private label, in our minds, and when we do our equity studies, it's essentially the second most important asset of a business. You have the retail experience, and then you have the private label. And the reason it's so important is, back to the first comment, is that it lives in the homes of the consumer. It's a living billboard or living advertisement for your business. So if you don't have the investment in creating an emotional connection, the emotive copy that helps to inspire people, the visuals that help to really reinforce a certain tone and personality for both your brand and your business, you're missing an opportunity to get part of that conversation and live on the counter, not in the cupboard. You know, so.
All great points.
Thank you.
To that, to being a living billboard, how long do you keep the billboard before you redesign it or refresh your design or even completely replace it? And I mean, there's always a risk in replacing a design people have become accustomed to, isn't there?
You know, that's a great point, John. We try to set, you know, as an absolute benchmark, the five-year mark is really the point of departure. Any packaging that lasts less than 5 years, in our minds, would essentially say that maybe it was based too much on the trend and not on the categories. So, you know, it may have been great for the moment, but not something that was going to survive over time. Now, you mentioned about, you know, the product quality, though, and that really is important, is that, you know, if there are innovations in the category that suggest that quality has changed or that there's new flavor profiles or so forth, those might spark opportunities to do some, if you will, some refresh of design systems. But essentially, we look at a five-year window of staying relevant in the minds of the consumer.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean you're looking at redesigning it within sort of the end of that five-year period, or when do you start that process?
No, you know, looking at brands, it's actually not so much about 5 years from the beginning. It's managing the brand equity and monitoring it. So really, when we do research, you know, equity testing for our clients, private label is part of that. And that's usually the first indication. You know, there's obviously the sales data that you look at, but also the health of the brand, that is the private brand, is a good indicator that perhaps there's a need to take a step back and look at a refresh at that time. So it's an ongoing equities testing, and when those indicators start to lag, we start to say maybe it's a time to take another look at it.
So you should be constantly monitoring the health of your brand as well.
Absolutely. You know, businesses do that for their overall business. They do a lot of equity testing on their overall business. I'm surprised how few make private brand a material part of that equity testing study, particularly if you buy into my earlier comment that it's really the second most important asset of the business.
I was going to ask if you're seeing more of that, or what do you think the state of retailer care for their private brands is today?
I think there is definitely, overall as an industry, we're becoming more, I'll say, academic about private label. That is to say, understanding that the days of the shoot from the hip are probably past us. The idea of decision making being made, you know, in remote corners and not based on things like consumer and shopper insights and collective decision making. So the academics around private label decision making are definitely, I mean, it's talked about more and more in the corner office, if you will, and getting that kind of lip service. And I would say that we're on the dawn of seeing the next phase of true innovation happening in private label. So the intellectual will is there, and we're just about to see it converting into expressions to the consumer.
And retailers are putting the investment into it that's needed to take it to the next level.
You know, I love the concept of the pendulum shift, John. And you know, you can look back 15 years and say there wasn't enough investment. And you know, frankly, I see some organizations that are maybe over investing. Which at the time, you know, for now, to get yourself level set in the requirements behind effective private label development is the right thing to do. But there's, at one point, there's going to be the, you know, the sort of the pendulum's going to swing back, and we're going to say, okay, I've gotten the heavy lifting done with these resources. Now, you know, tough economic times stay with us or come again, and we rationalize those departments and we try to squeeze more juice out of the resources we have. So I think in fact, in some cases, the pendulum swung too far to the side of the academics, and we'll see that adjustment happen again in the, you know, in the short term.
Oh, that's interesting. Business often is a series of pendulum swings till we find the sort of the golden mean in the middle, isn't it?
I think, you know, and if you look more purely from if you will, the sort of the design strategy or the creative strategy, one of the pendulum swings is towards the very systematic approach to packaging, and certainly we see some shift happening back to being a little more category relevant. So, but I think that's a topic for another day, is it, John?
It sounds good. Yes, and we'll definitely be doing more of these with you. And thanks very much for joining us today. That's actually all the time we have. So let me thank you again, Patrick. We've had Patrick Rodmel with us. And we thank our listeners as well and invite them to listen to all our PL Buyer podcasts with Patrick and other industry leaders by visiting our website, privatelabelbuyer.com, where you can listen to and download these podcasts. Thanks again, Patrick, and goodbye to our listeners. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks.